Hey, Jess.
What's up?
You know, whatever's up. What's up is up. We were just talking about this. So I did this sort of like high-end photographic print off of a shot that I took of our friend's sort of like singing debut thing. And it worked out pretty well. I took it on film. And so I thought
Shout out to Millicent Cho, big friend of the pod. My sister from another mister did a fantastic show in New York a couple weeks ago. Yeah. Amazing woman.
I know. You know, that's so obvious. I never heard it before. Sister from another mister. Yeah. No, yeah? It was awesome. We had, it was classy, you know, like we like dressed up a little and then we went out. Chris was there. Adam was there. Chong was there, who was in the film. And then Millie, who produced the film, was singing. And then we went to like this theater sort of in Hell's Kitchen area, you know, near Broadway. And she did her sort of two woman show. And it was classy. It was a classy ordeal. And
yeah, you guys looked sharp.
Yeah.
You guys cleaned up good.
It was cool. It was a packed house, too.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
she was singing hits from the late 80s and stuff. And I had John Pang, who comes on this pod a lot. He left his Leica with me, his very fancy Leica. And I took it. I thought, well, what an excuse to bring it out. So I took the Leica.
By the way,
that's
the caliber Plan A is at now. We hang with people who just like leave Leicas around.
Yeah, with like $10,000 cameras.
Yeah, that's where we're at now.
Yeah. This thing dude, I'm first class right now all the way. It's ridiculous.
We're not the ones leaving Leicas around, but the friends of the pod do.
This is going to be a segue into the pod, what we're going to talk about. But like, yeah, I was like, yeah, it's an excuse to use this beautiful Leica camera. And like most of the shots were, you know, like with film, like, you know, most of the shots in like such a horrible lighting situation as like a show with like a spotlight and stuff. Like one of them, I really liked, well, a few of them, but this one I really liked. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to keep it all analog and I'm going to have it darkroom print. I'm going to have to print this in a darkroom, you know, with like an enlarger and that little red light that comes on. Like you're trying to, like you're a cop on a stakeout mission, you know, trying to develop pictures of like the person you're trying to arrest,
or a serial killer trying to print out pictures of your victims, you know, that vibe.
Exactly. Yeah, with the red light in the basement, and just and then slowly like Jodie Foster's face appears on this like 8x10 piece of paper.
Yeah.
And so I go to this NYC. You can still find this stuff, and there's this really high end photo services shop that does darkroom enlargements and stuff. And I walk in, I have no business being here. And I'm like, yeah, this is how I have fun these days. Do you know what I mean? Like I overspend for small things and it's all, this is where we left off. And I said, we should record is I walk into this, like, I mean, I don't, who comes to these stores? I don't know. Just like people, like artsy people. I don't know, but it's all like Chinese dudes.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, that's surprising. It's not, the store is not run by Chinese people. It's like a bunch of like older, I think it's like a bunch of like older people who are in the profession, like back in the day, like probably back in the 80s and 90s when like professional photographers were using film. And it's all these like older people, probably they're like 60s, maybe 50s. And they're still doing the dark rooms, like keeping the craft alive. And they're training up a bunch of younger people. So there's like three like old school, older sort of like film professionals, and then they're training up a bunch of maybe like six or seven younger people. Who's the market for this? Like, okay, you're going to transfer all these older skills that are now obsolete because everyone's doing digital or whatever. And who are you going to train up? And who are you going to sell these services to? And it's all like sort of hipster Asian people, you know? So
yeah.
I don't know. I just thought it was surprise. I was not totally expecting that, but I guess I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea what to make of it, but it's honestly, I've seen that in LA too. Like, I found a roll of film. I guess I had shot this back in like 2005 or something, 2007. Around, that's the last time I was using film, basically, before I switched to a DSLR. And then I just decided to go have it printed because I did not have the foggiest clue. I didn't even know if there was anything on this film. And then so I went to this obscure place, and it's not even in an Asian area. There aren't any, in my neck of the woods. I live in the San Gabriel Valley, and it's very densely Asian, but there aren't that many shops. So I had to hoof it to like a mostly like ethnic, like white area on the west side. And I'm standing in line, and literally like all five people standing in line in front of me are Asian. And I've actually seen this replicated in a couple of different places, like not the not not like mass culture events, but anything that's like a slight cut above in obscurity or like technicality, like something that requires a little bit of skill. That target audience is very heavily Asian. Like I've seen this in like electronics, like vintage electronics shops. Like they buy and sell and fix up like old like computers or old sound equipment, stuff like that. And then like it's again, it's gonna be this like Japanese guy who's been in the whose family's been here for like 100 years. And the clientele are all like second gen Asians.
Yeah, I'm no,
I
you
don't
know, I was just talking, we were just talking about this the other day, me and Shannon, and I was like kind of complaining how people don't these days. I feel like this is a high, super generalization, but like people don't really go deep in on like things anymore. They don't go deep in on interests, pursuits, hobbies, you might call them. But when you do, and you do a deep dive into anything, I swear to God, like the people who go deepest into this shit are all Asian people. Like, okay, so I had to temporarily I have to adopt a turtle. Okay, don't it's a whole complicated thing. But I have to take care of a turtle. And I was like, all right, well, if I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna do it right. So I'm gonna learn how to set up an aquarium and all this stuff, and then I don't know. When I do this, it just I get really like I got to know everything. Do you know what I mean? Like I become like
Yeah,
an
you gotta go
information junkie.
in.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
go in. I go deep in, and all roads lead to like Asian dudes on online when it comes to aquarium shit. And I don't know. I just started going into a little bit of a YouTube hole on how to take care of fish. And there was this one guy who's like setting up he actually sells, he's like, you know, he's one of the, he's like a YouTuber that does this stuff. And he was like, it was a white guy. And he was like, okay, well, so for this coral tank, I had to go to like the real master. And then he had to go to some shop in Ohio of all places. And in Ohio, there's a Vietnamese guy who has like the largest saltwater fucking fish and coral wholesaler in the country, and this guy is just like the guru of all like saltwater aquarium stuff. I don't know, but yeah. And he added he was on the thing, and he was like, oh, it was such an honor meeting this guy. I was like, oh, this I don't know who this person, I've never heard of this stuff. But yeah, like sitting atop this very sort of like obsessive hobby that involves a lot of knowledge and dedication, I'm sure, to grow saltwater, you know, aquariums or stuff. Some Vietnamese dude in Ohio. Do you know what I mean? Is that what you're talking about? Is that along the lines of what you were thinking when I mentioned this?
Kind of like it just doesn't surprise me at all. Like there's going to be like a good mix, right? But it's just so like the number of Asians is not proportionate to either our overall population or even relative to that to like whatever pocket of like LA that I'm in or whatever. Like it Like I was looking on eBay for an old like an old Apple Lisa just to kind of see what's going on. And then I reached out to a seller because I had a few questions. It did not surprise me at all that this is like a David Chang in San Francisco.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. Like both, it's people on both sides of the transaction, either like the technician or the engineer or the vendor or the consumer side.
Which was you in that case.
Which was me, also right. Asian, just FYI. But it's not like there's vinyl shops all over town. I'm sure vinyl is big, you know, in the hipstery parts of New York too. Like you go in and that's a good mix of people, usually predominantly hipster white people. So like that's like at that level of culture, like that's like artisanal collecting, right? There isn't much to that aside from like a curated sense of taste. But if it actually involves like interacting with the thing, like somehow the audience just skews Asian.
Yeah. I can't explain it, but it's good. I mean, I think this is a good thing, but
I think it is a good thing. I mean, like, us Asians, we're just born for the factories, man. We just yearn. We yearn to work with our hands, I guess. I don't know.
I just like the idea of people going deep into anything. I mean, it doesn't really matter what, but you know, I feel like the danger the danger of the modern era is that we all know too little about too many things, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and as much as we talk about like Asians are stereotyped as like science or engineer, like STEM nerds, you know, autistic STEM nerds, basically doomed to just be like drones working under someone else's creative genius. Like you go to the big art universities, the art, like LA has a ton of like graphic arts, like industrial design, fine arts, a bunch of very, very good art schools. Enrollment is has got to be like 60% Asian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some part of it is absolutely like rich Asians sending their their dilettante daughters or whatever to get an art degree in the States, right? They're not actually intending to be working. But that's not all of them. That doesn't explain how 60 to 70% of these art schools are cranking out artists, like professional working artists at this level.
I mean, that's me getting out of 23rd Street, right? And I'm going over to this photo lab, and I'm walking by, you know, the hunting grounds of like FIT, and like 23rd Street's a very artsy place when you get out, you know. And a lot of Asians mm-hmm. with today I went to the art store there on 20th Street, and it's like, yep, Asian dude with holding a string bass on his back, you know, sort of like a skinny Asian girl in streetwear doing shopping for weird art shit, you know, like Asian all over. That world is very Asian.
Yeah.
You know, visibly. 23rd Street is very Asian. It's a specific type. It's like younger, probably fairly privileged. A lot of international mm-hmm. students, I'm guessing, but also a mix of like American they probably took some artistic pursuit and they went in really deep. And I think probably I would guess, like, I don't know, this is not my world, but I would guess in media that there's actually loads of Asian people like art designs. I remember like on Twitter one time I was tweeting about some song from the 80s or something, and some guy started engaging me on that song, going, I love that song. And we were laughing about it, and we're mutuals. So I don't remember this guy because I never interacted with him, but I checked out his bio and he was like one of the principal art guys on all those Sony animations like K-pop and K-pop Demon Hunters and Spider-Man and all that stuff. And I was like, oh shit. Okay. Mm. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, like we don't need to repeat that like science and engineering has been Asian dominant for a long time at this point. That's very kind of visible right now. But like, nobody really talks about the other, like the creative industries are like, is it, the creative industry, that pipeline is getting pretty stacked with Asian people.
Yeah.
This is also holding true for culinary school too.
Mm. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Or like culinary pursuits. And you're starting to kind of see this, like head chefs of even like non-Asian fine dining establishments are increasingly Asian, like line workers are Asian. There's a ton of like influencers and, you know, actual like notable professionals now. Just at like everywhere you look, anytime that there's like deep expertise required, somehow that's like, we're just all like, that's where we're going.
What's the reason for this? Like, why is it because of the affluence? And, you know, like you don't really go into these fields, I think, unless you have some degree. I don't think you have to be rich, but like you have to have some degree of like affluence, have been raised in a family that encouraged you to do artistic pursuits and.
Maybe I don't know how to quantify in dollar terms. I think there is like a bottom floor in terms of like just material privilege you kind of mm-hmm. need, or like a collective sense of like privilege, I suppose.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a matter of like maturation, mm. right? We're no longer driven by that first gen impulse to just survive. So you just do what it got to. You just got to do what you got to do to put food on the table. Like the imperative is now a little bit more elevated than that.
Yeah.
I also think Asian parenting is pretty optimized for people to kind of go deep on something or the other.
Oh, how do you figure?
I'm interested in that idea. We kind of touched on this. Like, this was just a kind of budding theory that I had, that this is kind of this could be kind of a schism between this whole, the ideology of the East and the West, possibly.
Yeah, let's go there, because I want to go deeper and wonder, because I do think at some level there is some kind of cultural explanation for this. It goes beyond just, you know,
like
privilege or whatever.
I'm sure we've all been exposed to white American like waspy parenting enough to have heard the phrase like, oh, yeah, we tried little Janie on piano. She just wasn't good at it. She just wasn't interested. So we had to go find something else. Turns out what she really likes is watching Bluey on the iPad. That's what she's good at.
Mm.
I'm making up, of course. But that first part, I'm sure we've all heard it, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. oh, they just weren't good at it. And like, we just want him to find his passion or what he's actually good at. That implies this might actually go to like the Western concept of a soul, right? And this seems to be kind of a thing that we are collectively obsessed with, that there is this
we being like in the West.
Yeah, okay. I think so. People kind of immersed in like Judeo-Christian culture and then what it's evolved into in the modern age.
Okay.
Like the whole discourse on authenticity kind of gets back to, it's basically a secular version of kind of drilling down into the pure soul. Like, we're all trying to peel off the corrupt layers of society, social influence and everything. Like, all that's just a corruption and a distraction. Mm-hmm. We have to really get down and polish all that, all the husk off to get that pure kernel of truth inside you, which has been incorruptible and is just there waiting for you. It's a completely unique thing.
So I want to anticipate your, just so I think I'm on the right track here. Like, are you saying that that might lead to sort of like a shrink wrap type childhood where like children are raised to simply be like not exposed to corrupting forces and they're pure and perfect and.
Yeah, I think so.
Remain children for as long as possible.
Yeah, I think that explains some part of helicopter parenting or overprotectiveness, because then the idea is that like us adults, we're fucked. We're corrupted. We might be beyond saving. We've just been too polluted. Children, however, are pure.
Are born perfect. Yeah.
They're born perfect. Their authentic selves are fully out in the wild. And it's our job as parents or as adults in society to protect that and shield them as much as possible. And insofar as their development is concerned, I think it gets kind of pathological, because then you're letting the child dictate that evolution.
I agree that's happening. I don't necessarily know if I can trace it back to something like Judeo-Christian values, because was it always like this? I feel like this is more of a modern thing. No?
See, I don't think it was like this when we actually just did believe in God and a soul. I think this is like a secular perversion of like an old ethos.
But what about
like when
we were just, what about like in the 90s? Like, I don't know. I feel like my generation, Gen X, like we were we were known to be the latchkey generation, and the parents basically didn't raise us all that much. They were just like, here's a key, we're going to hide it under the mat, and then we'll be home at 6.
That's still like a very materialist, very practical approach to parenting. And I think that's you guys were probably the last to have benefited from that. But it's a very like practical, like, okay, pulling it one step back, like that's probably the last generation where people had kids just because you had kids.
Not as like a life project, but
not as a project of like meditative self, like a self evaluation, like a total, like you got to like balance you got to balance your books. You got to do some introspection. You got to go to therapy. You got to do the work, and then you become a parent. Like it becomes an entire project of self exploration and self fulfillment, basically, to put a kid out there. Whereas like in prior generations, it just kind of fell into place. You find a spouse, or one is basically assigned to you, and then you just kind of have some kids.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Like the question, like, why do you want to have children? Just did not exist.
Yeah.
Right. Just
not in the way it does today.
Nearly. Like you had kids because that's what you do.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's much more of a, like you said, it's a project that you undertake of your own, like of you have to intend to do that to make it happen.
It's so and
if
weird
you don't
because,
intend, there's a lot of judgment, like, especially now that times are tight. There's a lot of people who, you know, with families, their children, they're complaining about, you know, like struggling to put food on the table or wondering how to pay for health insurance. And by far the most frequent comment is you shouldn't have had kids then. So I'm not really criticizing people for doing, I know we talk about parenthood, right? And you know, you and I both basically have chosen to not have children, and we've gone through that before. But I have a lot of sympathy for people who did make that choice and the circumstances got tighter. But because now parenthood is a choice, you are now penalized for making the wrong one in a way that's a lot easier for us to just dump responsibility onto the head of the individual parent. Prior to this, if we're going back to Judeo-Christian values, supporting widows and children is right there in the Bible. There's not as much room for that kind of sympathy in a time when parenthood is actually a choice. It's easier to say, well, you chose to have the kids. The burden is now on you, not society.
Yeah, my experience with that was like, you're right. I think it's one of those things like back in the day, people walked into it without like, it was obvious that that's what you do. Right, like you just do it. But and I think that was sort of what was expected of us too, my generation. But I started hearing things like from people saying like a little bit older than me, sort of saying things that would make me think, like, you know, they would say like, oh yeah, but once you have the kids, it's like you can't, because I there are few career tracks where, like mine, which is, you know, the big law path, right? And sort of intersection of law and finance. Like, few careers, I'm just trying to think if that's true. I think more and more, this is maybe true of tech as well. But there are a few pursuits that so many people are going after because of relative prestige and compensation, where at the same time, you're hearing a lot of stuff from people saying, like, it's not a good idea. You know, like, it's really terrible. Mm-hmm. And I would hear stuff like, and people would say, oh, yeah, but, you know, I could just, like, stack up some for a few years, and then I'll hit eject. And so many people would say, that's what you think. Wait till you have some kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, I keep hearing that. And then I had this one job where to his great credit, he just said whatever the fuck was on his mind. And we were having drinks on a Friday after work. And I was relatively new there. And the guy said to me, he was like, hey, you got kids? And I said, no. He's like, you married? I say, yeah. He was like, have the kids. I was like, okay. And then the other guy who worked for him said, yeah, have the kids, and then he'll have you by the balls. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, I'm having my second kid in a few months. And he was like, this guy's going to have me by the balls after I get this kid. And they both laughed. And I was horrified. I was like, that is not funny. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I know it's funny to say because it's
dark.
It is. It's like, dude, that's very serious because it's too true. Like, you and your boss should not talk about things like that, but they did.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It was really weird. There was a lot of like just little moments like that where I was like, dude, I gotta step back for a second, think about this a little bit more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm with you. Like, I think it's so fucked up that there's such a heavy penalty for that. So
I mean, the US at this point is like 10 cartels in a trench coat, and all of them are shaking you down.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, yep. Stuff associated with survival is going through the biggest shakedown right now. Like, yeah, food prices doubled. What are you going to do, not feed your kids?
Well, you know, the thing is, like, what I've seen is, you know, if you were to just cut back and just do the basics, like, I don't think it would be really all that bad. But, like, one of the things that I've noticed, that I have had several of my parent friends confirm this, is, like, you know, it's easy to go, it's easy to, like, not spend on yourself, right? It's easy to, like, go with the cheap, eat at home, go with the cheap alternative, don't need to drive a flashy car, live in a lower cost area, you know, whatever, downsize a little bit. It's easy to do it for yourself. It really is. But it's harder to do that for your kids. I think mm-hmm. And they all agreed, like, almost all my parent friends agree with this, mostly fathers, right? All fathers, really, that whatever, if it's just themselves, they really don't give a shit. They're like me. They're basically like me. But when it comes to their kids, they have a really hard time saying, like, yeah, you're going to have to cut back. We can't, you know, so they really feel obligated to be these super providers for their children. And I understand that, but on the other hand, it's like, are you conditioning your children to think that they're rich?
Right.
Because I'm not sure that that's a good idea, because unless you actually are rich, then it doesn't matter. But the bar for rich is pretty fucking high these days, like pretty fucking high. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I don't think any of them qualify, at least not in my mind, that I'm not sure that that's a good idea. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, they get you. That's how they get you. I mean, there's a reason. I don't know exactly how it works in New York. I imagine it's somewhat similar, especially outside, maybe outside the city. I don't know. But the highest real estate valuations are also one. Okay. The best school districts have the most expensive houses.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So, like, so they get you by the balls. Just like, you have very few options if you care about your children's education. And you have even, and if you have the slightest means of being able to afford that kind of life. So that locks you into a certain floor of spending. It's very hard to break out of.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You can't do things like just pick up and move to a, you know, to a cheaper house because the school district sucks. And then what are you going to do? Pay that difference to send them to a private school that's going to be an hour and a half away?
I just don't know. Like, I don't feel like I'm in any position to judge the wisdom of that kind of thing, you know? But, like, for me personally, I'd say that growing up, it was like, I don't know if I'd have benefited from going to like a private school or whatever. Like, going to a good school where like you're safe and you have friends that are really motivated and smart is really important. But like, I don't know. I think this idea of going to like a status type school is kind of stupid. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I feel like I think the dumbest idea I've ever heard is this idea that like the upper middle class people should try and ingratiate themselves to like the children of people who are wealthier than them, because that's how your children are going to worm their way into the upper ranks of the higher class mm-hmm. people. And I'm like, there's just something so scummy about that point of view. It's like the opposite of trying to cultivate growth in your children and teaching them valuable lessons about life. And even if they don't get it, like, you're supposed to be, you know, like a solid anchor for a set of like inviolable principles, and you're supposed to foster growth in an environment that might be a little bit hostile to growth, you know? And then but instead the parents are like, yeah, we want you to like suck up to the rich kids. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck is that? I don't know. And I've heard that said enough, right? If I hear that,
it's
I don't
just
know.
Creepy.
Yeah, part of me is just like, you know what? None of this is going to work out for you. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, that's just, what kind of lesson is that? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, do you tell your kids that this is why we're doing this? Because
I've heard this said in front of
them. That's such a... That's such a court eunuch thing to say.
It is. It is. And I'm telling you, like, it, as time goes on, I've started to just sort of accept that this is in the culture, and I've started to accept that, like, no, it's not normal or healthy, and but that it is, that's what it is. That's, it's there. And it's not going to, not only is it scummy, but I don't think it's going to be good for the kids at all. Like, you know what I mean? And meanwhile, you know, I feel like kids are not... This is the other thing that I've noticed is, like, unless I'm wrong and I'm just not seeing... And I'm just missing it because, you know, I don't spend a lot of time with kids, obviously. But, like, kids are not going deep in on weird shit like they used to. Mm-hmm. That, you know what I mean? Like, they're not... They don't develop... Their personalities are based on consumption choices and not pursuits. It's like, you know, it's like all about preferences in sort of like a consumer mindset of like, what show do you like? What clothes do you like? What haircut do you, you know, your style, your mm-hmm. style persona. But I feel less and less like there's individuality based on pursuit, based on like what it is that you like to do, what it is that you think you're good at. What do you want to do when you grow up? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And people used to, you know, when I was growing up, I feel like, God, I'm doing this, you know, where it's like when I was growing up, but like people were like fucking crazy music nerds, or they were crazy engineer. Like, we had engineering nerds. That was a thing. You know, computer nerds, art nerds, sports nerds, you know, like everything. And they were self-motivated, and maybe I think they did get inspiration and encouragement for their parents, but they developed a sort of like self-propelled pursuit into those things, pretty deep into those things. And I don't know, I feel like that's the better path for like middle-class kids.
Yeah. Oh, looping it all the way back around to that tangent about like Eastern versus Western philosophies of relates to parenting. I kind of wonder if there's a seed, like we can start to trace where this, like, where there's an Asian dominance in these like more skill-based education pipelines, back to the lack of a concept of some incorruptible pure soul. Like, I feel like in Asian parenting, the child is moldable clay.
Yes, that is very true.
Like, yeah. You're not good at math? Well, get good. We're going to get you good. Like, I've heard, it's such a pet peeve of mine that white people especially just say this shit. Oh, I'm just not good at math. Get good.
Right.
No one's born good at math.
Yeah, and then this weird race science shit where it's like, you know how Asian people are, they're just good at math. I'm like...
We just got yelled at until... we learned it. Yeah. And then we were expected to learn it. And so we did. I think people, especially kids, rise to their expectations. I've never heard a parent say, oh, Timmy's just not good at using the toilet, so we just stopped. No. Like, what if Timmy's incorruptible soul just said, no, I'm against toilets. That's not what I'm about. No, the parents are like, no, you're fucking using the toilet until you learn how to use the toilet.
Yeah.
I don't care if that goes against who you actually are. In this house, you're going to go in the toilet. Right? So, like, that's, the kid learns because he is expected to learn, and the parents will go to the mats to make sure that is accomplished. But when it comes to like long division or differential equations, then white parents are just like, what? Like, oh yeah, fuck it. Just not good at it. How is that an explanation for anything? That's the kind of lazy thinking that encourages shallow, like consumption based development in a kid.
I agree with you,
there's a ton of parents that I've seen that will like let their kid take like a couple of piano lessons, and the kid's like, oh, I just don't like it. Of course the kid doesn't like it. At some point it stops being novelty and it starts being work, and the kid's gonna not want to do it. And then what does the parent do? Oh, okay, that's fine. We'll move on to oil painting. And when you get tired of that, we'll go someplace else.
Yeah.
So there's this constant pursuit, and then there's this obsession with inner genius that I feel like is kind of endemic in especially upper middle class parenting. Like, parents are really focused on finding out what their kid is super good at. Like, there's got to be something you're just better at than every other kid, and it's our job to find it.
Right, right. Rather than like, oh, there's something that you're going to learn.
Yeah, like there's a set of base competencies and expectations for skill and critical thinking that we just expect out of you, and you're going to rise to that no matter what. Like, there's some toxicity in like the old school Asian way of parenting. Like, why did we have to all go learn piano or violin? Why? There was a little bit of lockstep thinking, but the expectation was we should come to adulthood with some kind of sense of culture just drilled into us, some competency in a line of thought that could lead to productive employment. It's a pretty good foundation for critical thinking and skill development.
I agree with the phenomenon. I still think that it has less to do with any inherent difference between like Western and Eastern culture, and it has more to do, in my opinion, with the sort of like subjectivity that comes with consumer capitalism, and the constant cultural signaling and programming that's very deep and virtually impossible to escape, that we are first and foremost consumers, and that our individuality is expressed through consumption patterns and preferences rather than what you do, because it's a political economic system or structure that encourages you to consume and to covet so that you become politically compliant and financially irresponsible. And
maybe I don't know if that's Judeo-Christian.
you know.
Or it's insofar as it's an East versus Western thing, it's that white upper class parents, especially starting in like the 90s, were just ahead of the curve on being immersed in the kind of culture that emerges from consumer capitalism, the transition into consumer capitalism.
I think that is what it is. I would say that growing up, I would put the kind of culture that I grew up with in my household very differently from quite differently, I would say, than some others. Not all others. I think a lot of immigrants were more like us. I grew up with a lot of Jews. I feel like a lot of Jews that I know were more like us in that regard. I grew up in a more in an environment where I didn't, I guess here's the thing, Jess, is like I didn't grow up in a Asian dominant area. There were a lot of Asians, but it was not Asian dominant. I think probably 15-20% would be like how many Asians you would find in my high school, or actually maybe looking at it might be a little bit more than that. But however, nonetheless, I feel like the culture that I grew up in was different than the one that we live in today. And mm-hmm. So I guess maybe that's why I tend to attribute things less to culture than to time and generation. And because I noticed there's such a huge shift in time and generation. And I also noticed that Asian kids are just as susceptible to this, and Asian parents are just as susceptible to raising their kids this way if they spend time here. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
going to say that there's a nugget. I actually agree with you that I think I do agree with you that it's more the distortion field of like late stage, like consumer capitalist society that's doing the heavy lifting. But I still think that there's like kernels of this that point at a much deeper ideological divide. Here's another thing that I'm just going to toss into the ring here. The discourse around gender that really came to the forefront of like cultural discourse in the past like 10 years. I'm not talking about people's right to identify as whatever they want to here. I'm just trying to think through like the roots of like there, like this didn't come out of nowhere, right? This kind of thing has to build on successive generations of thinking about the self and society. To me, the discourse on gender, the liberal leftist discourse on gender, of course, we know what it is on the right, right? Like God made man and woman, that's it. And on the left, it's that it's an ongoing individualist project, almost completely divorced from any wider cultural or social context. What are we actually saying with that? Aren't we getting towards this concept of this pure, this nugget of authenticity that's deep inside everybody that we are simply putting words to? And we're denying that there's even a cultural influence at that point. I don't think this American concept of gender exists elsewhere in the world. Because it's deeply individualist. It's saying everyone has this unique signature, essentially. It is the work of every adult to try to like unpack all the social bullshit and get to that pearl of purity, basically. And then once we are able to articulate that and bring that to light and that becomes our outer self, then we've basically achieved secular nirvana.
I think that's a fascist state of mind. It reminds me of Agent Smith, where he's like, tells Neo, he's just like, I hate the smell.
I mean,
you know, there's something about, yeah, there's something, you're right. I mean, I absolutely agree with the phenomenon. I absolutely agree. And I don't know where it comes from, but I'm not sure it matters. I feel like the idea that children are born pure and sort of like sort of like an expression of sort of like, you know, if there is a Judeo-Christian element to this, it's maybe like how maybe children are almost like little fallen angels, you know, or like they're like they're gifts from God or something like that. And, you know, there maybe there is a little bit of that there. And with Chinese, I can say, I don't think they think that way about kids, at least not in my experience. They just think of kids as like a very, just sort of like, I had a kid, you know, now I got to raise this thing. And yeah. There isn't a lot of like spiritual overhead when it comes to kids. It's not very, you know, but in a way, like, it's because it's so practical and so materially grounded. Yeah, I would say, you know, it's funny because, like, isn't, like, part of the Asian American culture of, like, the late 20th century, like, a lot about how my immigrant parents never told me they really loved me, but they expressed themselves through cutting fruit, you know, like, stuff like that. Like, it was, you know, as tropey as that is, I think there's some truth to it where it's just, like, you know, the American kids are looking for their parents to exhibit the same kind of like deep spiritual emotional connection to them because they're precious, beautiful children. Whereas the parents are kind of like, yeah, you're my kid. I don't know. I feed you. And
yeah,
you know, like what do you want? What is this? What is the big deal here?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe is that what you're getting at in terms of the cultural thing? Cause that I think is almost like the foundation of a lot of Asian American angst and culture, no?
Yeah, I think that kind of fleshes it out somewhat. Yeah, I think that's directionally where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a like, is the journey a practical one or like a spiritual one?
Right.
Right. Like, I'm sure. Like, that's simplifying it to a degree, right? I'm sure Asian parents find a lot of like personal and spiritual fulfillment in being parents, right? And there's obviously like being a parent is one of the most like humbling things a person can do in terms of like literally dealing with shit. So I'm not saying like it's all one or the other. It's just the general philosophy around how parents are expected to interact with their children and what the role even of parent and child is in that relationship seems a little bit different.
Yeah, I
like
would,
a lot
I
of
would...
the like white parent, like white criticism of Asian parenting is like, oh, but, you know, you're not really allowing the child to like flourish or like develop themselves. And the Asian parents, like, it's a kid. They can't develop themselves. They're going to eat junk food and watch TV all day. I can't do that. Like, what's your deal? Like, oh, I just want my child to be well-rounded. And then that was the catchphrase in the 90s, right? I just want well-rounded kids, right? Not these like not these nerds that you guys are cranking out. And now I hear a lot of, oh, we're raising our kids to be leaders in the space. You're raising leaders without expertise. This is kind of the downfall of America in a nutshell, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what is that? You want to cultivate leadership, but you're not cultivating any practical understanding of the world, the deep expertise in the world that leadership, true leadership, is actually built on. You're teaching your children to be narcissistic sociopaths.
I have two responses. One is, I think, regarding the sort of like sort of maybe somewhat emotionally flat practical side of Asian parenting. And I think there is truth to that trope. It's a misunderstood trope. I would say that my experience has led me to believe, as I'm now rounding out 50, I'm getting close to 50, that one of the reasons for that is maybe, and this is true for me, that a lot of the other stuff about life and the interiority of the subject of the parent and of about life and stuff, that's reserved for adult discussion. They don't really like having that discussion with children because children won't understand it. But when you have conversations with your elderly parents and you're my age, that does come up a lot. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like deeper discussions and more, I would say, like, I don't know what the word is, but, you know, more nuanced, psychologically deeper, introspective type things, observations about life, things like that. Like that really comes to define the nature of adult to adult conversations when with your parents as you get older. That's my experience. And then the other is that when it comes to like Americans and this sort of desire to shrink wrap their kids and protect their innocence and you know, just be sort of like, sort of, I don't know what there's a word for it. I don't know what it is. There's a phrase for it, but I've seen cases where I feel like part of that may actually be driven by, I know this is overused, but I think it might be driven a little bit by trauma, where like, I don't know what it is, but I feel like a lot of Americans, and this is true of Asian Americans too, there's a lot of like bad shit that happened to people. You know what I mean? Like bad shit that happened to women in their experiences in school and work. I know it's true of a lot of women I know, and they don't love talking about it. So I don't really know, but I get the feeling. And sometimes I wonder if that gets expressed in the parenting, where it's like, okay, look, I've had to be victimized. I have had my purity compromised or my dignity compromised or my values compromised, but I'm not going to allow that happen to my kid. Mm. And the response is sometimes seems to be too strong because it's coming from like a trauma response. I don't know if this rings a bell at all with
no people, this but... really does. And I mean, I don't mean to exactly paint it in stark like racial terms, because now, you know, now that I know a lot of people I grew up with Asian who are now parents, I can see that, you know, they are overcompensating for shortcomings in their own childhood and possibly going overboard in that, like overly, like if they grew up with overly strict parents, then they're like extremely permissive with their own. Like growing up like without getting a, like growing up with without a lot of like nice things, and then just completely like giving their kids a lavish childhood as compensation.
That's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So parents, maybe if the parents were really strict on the whole, like, you got to learn piano, you got to go to a good school, you got to become a doctor or a lawyer or something. And if they did that and they're unhappy with it, then they're kind of just letting their kids do the whole underwater basket weaving thing. You know that trope, right? Like the shorthand for a useless degree is underwater basket weaving.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I wonder if like if you look at the Mac, like the sort of cultural arc that we've been on, whether this wokeness thing, I mean, no one's ever said like wokeness is so it's so overly discussed. However, I wonder if part of that is the way that Me Too sort of fed into the sort of excesses of wokeism and the way that the culture started to, it may have subsided a little bit, but you know how woke parents were raising their kids with certain, you know, with a special emphasis on gender freedom and things like that. I'm being careful here because I don't want to be anti-woke. That's not my point here. I wonder if that's kind of broadly like what I'm trying to suggest, that there is a trauma response to that, which is like, okay, maybe some of the woke stuff went too far in terms of like the gender identity stuff, but like, look at the truth of America in the, you know, like, look at the truth of how men treated women or whatever, like, during, you know, behind closed doors, and what it was like for women. Like, maybe that was the response to, you know, like a culture that was like that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of abuse, I would say. I know a lot of women who had suffered a lot of, probably things that weren't so bad, let's say, that at the time they may have had enough. It may have been ambiguous enough to be like, fucking, that's just how shit is, you know? But like, if you put it in perspective, you gain some perspective on it, like a lot of inappropriate shit. And mm-hmm. that is whether you know it at the time or not, I feel like your instincts tell you it's not right. And there was something not right with our culture. And that lesson is being buried again because there's such this anti-woke backlash thing. I'm like, I'm not woke, but I'm not anti-woke either. I just want to know what the fuck is going on, okay?
And that's where I'm coming at. Like, I have no position on like what someone should or shouldn't do. I'm just thinking through like how did we get to this point? What's going on? What's in the mix here that has led us to this point?
Yeah.
And sounds like you're more or less on the same page with that.
I am, because I think the truth is that, you know, we talk about the 90s being the peak and the peak, you know, like, yeah, it was in a way, but like we should not sanitize the culture of the 90s
mm-hmm.
and the sort of like overt or not covert degeneracy of it. It's become more overt now, out in the open, and that is, I think, presenting its own problem, where American culture is becoming dissociated, and we have this extreme Byung-Chul Han style culture of like pure and unalienable virtue that I mm-hmm. think is what we're talking about when it comes to like the professional class and how we raise our kids, versus the fire above which we're trying to hold them, which is like this just sort of just totally overt, utterly shameless, and unmitigated culture of degeneracy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have both of them. And it's not surprising that we have both of them. And they're ripping people apart mm-hmm. is how I feel about the current culture. But in the 90s, I would say, you know, we look back and say it was like sort of peak, but like I would say that it was probably more covert then. But we were still heavily dissociated. There was a lot of bad shit, but it happened behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
So, I still think America is not necessarily, or maybe it, I don't know. Maybe it is tied to Judeo-Christian repression and all this stuff. Maybe it probably is. But for me,
there's
like,
no single one thing, right? It's mm-hmm. it's definitely those are the principles the country was founded on. But probably the bigger effect was the giant bubble of unexpected prosperity that catapulted a very young, a culturally immature country to the top of the globe.
Yeah.
Post-World War II. And by the end of the 90s, that the steam was running out. The train was still on the tracks, but the cracks were starting to show. And so the switch from covert to overt degeneracy is just a sign of when the wheels left the track, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a lot, like we talk a lot about the Class of 99 movies. A lot of that is about that, the covertness of the degeneracy. Like a lot of these things are happening behind closed doors. And in fact, like preserving the veil between public and the inside and outside is part of the movie.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Like, a,
yep.
like Matrix. You're not necessarily busting open the Matrix. You're simply finding another. You found another world. That line, that demarcation between the public and private, is basically always kept sacred.
Yeah, and fully dissociate, like covertly dissociated, where Ed Norton doesn't realize.
Literally, yeah. That, literally in Fight Club.
Brad Pitt is not a real person. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a psychological split, essentially, that's portrayed as a physical split.
Yes.
Like American Beauty is all about, that split occurring, in the suburbs.
Yep.
Where you would least expect it.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that draws a pretty clear line of what's going on. I feel like the 90s were remembered right now in a way that conforms to the very idea of the 90s that the class of 99 films were trying to bust, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've forgotten it. And but on the other hand, like that covertness is now just out in the open. Is what was covert is now public, and we are, as a society, becoming more and more dissociated, where we have, I think, a professional class that really wants to stay pure,
yeah,
really wants to stay pure, and sort of like pretend that this culture of degeneracy is like not there. And I think it's kind of a horror to them that it is, because it's going to disrupt their project and they don't know right. how to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Should we, I kind of want to also talk about the flip side to this, though, which is like with the Asian people, which is the fetishization of suffering, which you and I have.
Oh, we'll get into that. Just one thought that occurred to me while you're talking about this, that's this line between public and private.
Yep.
I think the story, one of the stories of, the past decade or so, especially with visibility discourse in minority ethnic circles, we kind of all were told that breaking down that wall between public and private is the key to our spiritual salvation, in a sense. That the inner self should be made public, and the public should be accommodating of it. Mm-hmm. Do you follow what I'm saying?
No, give me an example. So are we talking about sort of this PMC group
I think they're the ideological spearheads for this. But oh, sure. if we're talking about like the class of 99 movies, it's one of the themes is that having this wall between essentially the real and the fake, right, is bad. We should break that. Part of the work is to be conscious of the wall and then break it down.
Yes. Now I know what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there was a whole lot of pressure on us individually and as a society to expose this inner self, make that there should not be that it is a crime and an injustice that people have to have outer personas and inner personas.
Mm. Yeah.
And so the truly authentic self is the one who can just be one unified presence. And there's no differentiation depending on social context, essentially. There's all talking about code switching.
Yeah. Yep.
I was always a little confused about that, because talking about I do understand in the context that the term code switching was created and popularized and in actual academic circles, I really do get it, because it started in the civil rights movement, talking about like the overwhelming pressure on Black Americans to kind of adopt the cultural norms of WASP society just to be able to earn a living, or they'd be shut out. That's the context it started in, and there's a lot of validity in that. But I think it kind of got it morphed into something that it's just not, where we're talking about not liking that we have a private self and a public self at all. Like, we should just be our messy inner selves in public, and it's a crime against us if society cannot accommodate that.
Yeah, and I think it worsened the problem too, because if people were their true authentic selves in public, and it was a false integration of sorts, because then they started, like you said, that was why, maybe why there was this sort of this attempt to say, oh, that was in you, but that's not really you. Like, that was planted there, or that's a corruption.
Yeah.
So then you had to purify, because it was like, you know, so what seemed like becoming really authentic and open and integrated was actually, I think, you know, just further and deeper repression.
Right. Because you end up aping the norms of just some other group. It's just smaller and smaller each time.
Right. And a lot of stuff, you know, is just being chalked up as not really part of, even though it's in you, it was put there by someone else.
Yeah.
And so it's not really you. And it's like, okay, what's the difference, right? Like, if you grow up, if you raise your children in a culture as degenerate as ours, they're going to have degenerate thoughts and desires implanted in them by that culture. And thus, it's part of them. And it doesn't matter where it came from. It was internalized. It's part of them now. Just right. Like the influence of the parents is going to get internalized. It's part of them now. You know what I mean? So I feel like, yeah, you know, there is this belief that you can sort of undo things and peel it back. And I think maybe the idea of undoing, the idea of purifying, the way of finding your way back to your own original source is the ideological architecture of, like, parenting for this class. It's a do-over.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think that that's possible.
It's tracing merges on your cosmic Git repo until you get to the mythical source. But, like, I realize that's kind of obscure. I apologize.
Our listenership will know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. But this idea that there is this like pure self to get to in the first place, I don't think that's a universal norm. I just don't. This pursuit for authenticity to me reads the exact same as the search for a soul.
Yeah. Yeah. Should we continue this on the bonus
portion of this pod? Where I get to unleash 30 years of what the hell at my parents.
Hell yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, I want to talk. So on the bonus pod, we're going to talk about sort of like the flip side to a lot of this stuff where we've been blowing, you know, we've been blowing a lot of kisses at Asian parenting, and it's like refusal to buy into the bullshit of the late stage.
This is now back of the house talk. Party's over. We're flipping the sign. It's now closed. We're moving to the back of the house now.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
Yeah.
You're gonna hear about it.
But we're gonna close the door first.
Yeah. All right. So this is the end of part one of the podcast. We'll do the bonus on the Patreon feed as usual. To get access to the bonus pods, go to patreon.com/planning.